Hello guys, can you hear me well? My name is Jakub Steiner. I'm part of the huge design team that we have. And I'm gonna sort of disappoint my designer friends and colleagues, and I'm just gonna be talking about the shovel that I use, the tools that I use. It's not gonna be much of a GNOME design talk, more it's going to be a Blender talk. So what is Blender? It is a 3D package that is used to produce full-blown movies. Here's a few titles that the Blender Foundation, the sort of mother of the project, has sponsored and made possible. Latest one being Tears of Steel, which is a sci-fi movie. If you've never seen any one of those movies, definitely check out at least Sintel, which is an actual movie out of all those that were produced, and it stands on its own. But most of these are really great test bed for developing Blender, so they provide really use cases, relevant use cases for the tool to develop. It's also a game production environment, so it can be used to develop games. I've actually considered using the game engine to produce interactive prototypes for GNOME. I've even tried to follow Pippin's footsteps and present in Blender, which I can just demo my failure. Let me see. I lost my cursor somehow. That is not good. How do I get it back? Okay. I'm back with a cursor, thank you. I think it's this one, yeah. Well, it actually has slides from our previous, because I don't know if I should get into details, but the text tool that is in Blender kind of behaves completely different in the game engine, so I thought I'm gonna just present like that with image planes, but it turns out to be very clumsy. But you can do pretty much anything with Blender. But back to topic. So it is a game engine. It is also an icon creation tool. Recently, these are some of the icons in GNOME that were created also thanks to Blender. And we also use it for documentation. Some of you have seen my LGM talk where I discussed the Getting Started project that me and Petter created for the last release of GNOME. So it's sort of a really simplistic animation describing and showing kind of a hands-on, helping people make the first footsteps in GNOME. And it's actually translated. So the tool, Blender, actually has very good integration with a scripting language. So we just call the renderer after translating all the strings. So even the animation itself is translated. But what I'm going to be talking about here is using Blender as a prototyping tool for prototyping the sort of transitive state. So prototyping animation. Why did I choose Blender? Apart from the fact that it's a tool that's available, mainly because of iteration to get something. I'm actually probably getting ahead of myself. I've done this. This talk will probably repeat a lot of the things that I've said on, if you follow the GNOME Design channel on YouTube. I've had a series of tutorials or videos, behind the scenes looks at how to do motion design with Blender. So the shortcut, I'm probably gonna hand out a PDF, or so the shortcut URL is actually the playlist of all the, because the channel is full of other like mockups and other interesting things, but that is just a playlist for the motion design. I'm going to shortly talk about why we need to mock up and design these transitions. You may have noticed that we kind of shifted in our designs, we kind of shifted away from those everything at your fingertips kind of interfaces where everything is thrown at you at the same time towards more streamlined interfaces. Some people, kind of mistakenly associate that with touch interfaces or the form factor. It's not related to touch, it's just that something that happened when these devices got popular. So we're doing interfaces that try to minimize the number of controls and Chrome being shown at the same time by only showing you controls that are necessary in the context of what you're viewing. And this sort of requires to change scenes or change the interface. It requires the interface to be more dynamic. And I have a few examples. And actually, as I was sitting and being very drawn to the last lecture, I also observed John hacking on scrolling and seeing him struggle with scrolling a terminal window by only a small bit, one line, and this thing happening, you know, binary without the smooth transition between that. And while one line is probably not as much of a change, if you're like repainting your scene, like with GNOME 2, if you remember, virtual desktops or workspaces were not received by majority of people very well because the transition just wasn't there. It was binary. You had one workspace with all your windows, and suddenly, either by hitting a shortcut or misclicking on the toolbar, your windows disappeared, and there was visually no indication or feedback what actually happened. I have another example of this directly in Blender. Let's just do a new scene for this. So let's take this cube. Well, a cube looks the same from all sides, so let's just scale it in Z like that, and perhaps make it more interesting. Do you mind if I sit and disappear behind the computer? And I'm just going to be this all-encompassing ambient voice. Okay, I'm just trying to make this shape look somewhat distinct from one side. So Blender has like multiple views, and when you switch the views, you can see that it actually transitions between them which gives you a much better idea of what view you're looking at. I mean, there's a label on the top left to like hint you what you're looking at, but it's much easier to figure out, you know, the way you're especially when you add a camera, you know, into the play. So the transition really helps you navigate in the 3D space. And in Blender, this is actually an option because they're somewhat crazy. And some people think, like, you know, this adds a fraction of a time, but it helps a lot by figuring out where you are in space. So that's why the transitions are actually very helpful in communicating what's actually happening in front of you. I think this is the default now. It's probably in the options somewhere, but you can try to help me find it. Yeah, it is somewhere. I don't know. So, I usually never get anything right the first time, and people sort of expect us when they look at the wiki, or when I post something on the YouTube channel, that it's the final thing, and no, not at all. We need to have tools that allow us to quickly iterate and get things right, especially in the time you don't want to wait for some, like, you're going to be switching workspaces all the time, but you know, the timing has to be right. So to get that flexibility of being able to change the timing, you have to have a preview of what you're doing. And Blender has a fairly reasonable view in the 3D viewport. Now, usually, because this is primarily a 3D package used for, you know, modeling, the primary view is usually the wireframe, but it also has, I'm gonna just load up something that's interesting and works. The scrolling one was good. So this is an old, very old project of mine. But you can see here in the preview, I'm seeing image textures. So this is a textured view, as the GLSL view, and it gets pretty accurate. I can also just hide everything that's outside the camera. I go to the camera, I have to select it first. Right here, camera buttons, and Passepartout is, I'm looking at it probably. Oh yeah, alpha, so I just make it fully opaque. NT, okay. So if I play back the animation, you're gonna get pretty much real-time playback of the animation without the need to wait for a render or anything like that. So this is really good for getting the timing right, but unfortunately it has many drawbacks. The kind of animation that we need usually involves switching states of a, like, you can see all the objects are just you know, mesh planes, and they have a texture attached to it. But to, like, mimic a change of a scene, I usually blend between them. So I have the material consisting of two image textures that are applied to the color of the material, and the alpha channel defines the transparency or opacity of that object. and blending between them does not get real-time rendered in the GLSL view. So you're not seeing. Let me just show you another example where this is demonstrated. So it's that would be it's also fairly long. So you're gonna go trip down the memory lane a little. So you can see the alpha is not composited correctly. And also, when you go to the overview, it should be shaded with black. The textures of the windows actually change. You can see some really poor design of virtual workspaces going on there. So so the GLSL view is not perfect. It has, in many cases, flaws. The pixel is now getting seriously hot. So I'm just gonna... What's the solution? I don't have any sound, so. So the Blender guys came up with, just for me, they came up with a new rendering engine, which is impressive in many other ways. But for me, the biggest thing that it brought was the interactive preview inside the viewport itself. So you're not actually... So to go back to my former workflow, if I actually wanted to see what the animation will look like, required me to render these into either an animation file, or later I was just doing image stills for a reason that I can explain if you're interested. So it was waiting, and I had my old computer, so it was really slow. Now I have like a multi-core beast of a machine, so it's better, but still it's a drag. If you can make a mistake and you don't see it, and I do. Every time I can make a mistake, I make it, and to correct it, I make another one. So it's just, and it's especially easy in Blender because there's like lots of things where you're reusing the same like material or texture that you're using elsewhere, and then you change it without thinking that it's actually being used by multiple objects, so you break it elsewhere, and you don't see it until you render it, and you render it, so it's just a very tedious workflow. So with the new, and I'm now going to demo. It was the solution to avoid like crasher bugs with cycles. It's disabled by default if you open it. So cycles actually iterates and provides a real-time, preview directly in the 3D viewport. And this is an accurate render. So except for motion blur, which I'm only using because I'm used to the 25 frames per second world, and just to like provide that fluidity for the eye, I cheat with using motion blur rather than doing everything 60 frames per second because that takes a lot longer and it's not really needed for the mockups. But apart from motion blur, it really provides an accurate render. I wish I had brought something more interesting than this, because what you're seeing for our mockups is never a lit scene. So the materials are all these image planes are being transmitted. So they're shining. So there's no actual lighting. It's very simplified. But if I move around in the timeline, everything that I see is an accurate render that I'm gonna get when I render these into image stills. Now, of course, I don't have a very powerful machine. It is powerful, but not as powerful to be able to keep up and giving me a real-time preview. So this is playback, but it's not really keeping up with the real-time playback. But I can switch back to something like the material view or just wireframe to be able to rehearse the timings better, but still like have another window of cycles, or just switch the view. So this would give you the real-time preview. And this is actually a mock-up for the work that Carlos is doing. It was there somewhere, I don't know. It's here. So we're gonna get this eventually. And so I'm going to, this talk is now over. I'm going to actually demo and show you some of the things that I do to produce these. And I'm going to do that by sitting and disappearing again. If at any time you have a question, please, you know, raise your hand and ask away. So I'm going to start with explaining the different material setup that you have for you. You have a question? No. Okay. So, like I said, things are completely different in cycles in terms of material setup. But you know, the Blender community has got infinite resources, so they're actually maintaining the two engines concurrently. But I think the new world is so much better and makes so much more sense. In the older world, you had like a special switch, which was shadeless, that allowed you to do something like this, where you did not worry about, you know, complex lighting. You're mocking up a user interface. Everything is just flat, shaded. All the textures are just that. You know, materials aren't very sophisticated. It's just the texture that's shining color and can be transparent. And even that, it didn't do all too well. Like blending the transparency along with the color, the state was kind of finicky at times, because you would get the alpha channel of the, you know, a blend of two alpha channels. There were cases where it didn't look right, and the setup was actually quite tedious. The setup for materials in cycles makes more sense, in my opinion. But you know, I was used to something else. How does that sound? So it was a little bit tricky, but there is. I'm going to start new. There is a very helpful tool to help you with using Blender for these sort of 2D animation, and that is importing images as planes. So it's a script that allows you to do just that. It's not enabled by default, so what you do is there's like an add-ons tab, and you search for import images as planes, and it's right here. So you just enable that, and you should have it. So now we can import images as planes. And this is actually two scripts at one, because right now I'm in the old world, the Blender render engine. If I use that, it's going to set up the materials appropriately, but if I change to Cycles engine, it's going to do something completely different. So it is the exact same workflow. I just need to find some texture. Where will wallpaper? Wallpaper sounds good. So it just did all the work for me. And if I take a look at the materials, actually it doesn't, so I'm going to split my view and show you the materials. So in cycles, the materials are not that. That is a capacitor. This is the materials. So I've actually done the wrong thing, and I didn't look at the options that the import script has. And let me just do the old wallpaper. So in here, there's a few options how you want to import your image. For our RGBA PNGs, so you know, color information plus transparency, you want to select the emission and transparency. So the material will emit color, and it's going to use the alpha channel from the image to use as a transparency mask for or shader. I'm going to show it right here. Also, there's multiple ways of how you can scale the image into the scene. I'm just going to use the relative size. So if I would... So if I would, I'm going to point the camera at it, Alt-R to, okay. So if I switch to the rendered view, you can see that this one is actually shining color onto the other one, but if I didn't have this one, well, there's some ambient lighting in the scene, so I would have to get rid of that. Anyway, so this is the right way to set it up. So the way it works, the materials are actually what they're called shaders. So the color information, there's like a emission shader which would normally allow you to set a color to emit. It's used for lamps, essentially, or that sort of thing. But instead, we are using the image texture. Whoops. The image texture, I don't really know what the strength deal is. Let's just say that the color information from the image is being passed to the emission shader that would, in this case, give us exactly what we need. Unfortunately, or in the cases where there is transparency information, we would need the other bit, which is a transparent shader, which usually just is that. Like if I set the color, I don't know why don't you want to do what I want? Yes, I do want this. There is probably a shortcut, I don't know. Now, there we go. Yeah, I want that. So it's providing a transparent transparency. But if we take the alpha channel of the image as a mask, a factor of how we're mixing these two colors, it's effectively doing what we want. So there's the emitted image going in here that would normally be like mixed based on the factor that's here. So this would be 50% transparent if I would keep the transparency channel white, but we're going to use the alpha channel as a mask. So I don't know why you can't see it, but it's there actually. In this case, the alpha channel is exactly the same. It's just a white blob. There's no transparency in here. So if I would take some other image that I know, it's an icon. Nice icon. How about, what is this? I have no idea. Oh yeah. So you can see that if I didn't have the mask, it's just mixing the color information from the image with the color that's provided by the transparent shader. If I use the mask from the alpha channel, it's doing what we need. So it makes sense. It would like be tedious to set up, which I actually had to do for a lot of scenes that I had when I was doing getting started. The Cycles engine has the great motion blur that's fast and accurate, and there's no trouble with it as with the compositor, composited motion buffer that the old rendering engine provides, or it also has like iterative motion blur, but that's like if you want 16 samples, that means that each frame is rendered 16 times, so it's just ridiculously slow. So Cycles, great motion blur. So I had to redo a lot of these things that the import images as planes script does for you, but it was worth it. I mean, it's this world is really much better. So another tool that I'm going to show you that's extremely useful for doing this sort of animation is the dope sheet, which I don't know why it's called dope sheet, but it's a great name. Let's try something like, let's load the app checker again. So as I was saying, iteration is key. So let's say I would want to change the timing of this bubble appearing. So Blender has got, I don't know why it's so slow. And it's got this, which is the dope sheet. So you can view the time, like there's also a graph editor. So for each object that we have here, any property can be animated in Blender. And you have this, you can't really see it. I would change the resolution, but then it would break because we tried earlier. So how can I do this? I could do this. User preferences, and there's like DPI, and boost this, like so. And but the lines are still tiny. You can't really see it, can you? Yeah. All right, never mind. So this is like the property changing in time, which is the axis. The dope sheet, on the other hand, only worries about the states of animation. So each state that you keyframe, you set that you want this to remain at this value at this point of time, is shown as a dot. It's kind of like it has this tree view that it aggregates like individual properties per object, so you can like have a fine detail, or you can just see the individual keyframes without really knowing what exact property it is. And just like in the 3D view, all the transformations that you can do on objects, you can do on all these keyframes. So for example, what was I gonna do? I forgot. I was gonna make this appear slower. Rearranged to accommodate this new. So if I would think that this slide, I hope it's not individual. I don't want to do too much tedious work. I think that at the end it's just one plane. It's going to be easier. Okay, so this one. So let's do this. So it changes across five frames, I think. 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5, 5 slower. We don't, but let's assume that we want to do that slower. So I have the final state here, and I can, these are really useful toggles here. This one will show objects that are not even in the scene. It can be moved to other layers or are hidden. So this enables to really see all the objects. And this one, on the other hand, is only showing keyframes that are related to the selected object, which, you know, this is the most useful tool, because you're going to end up animating, even with a simple animation that I showed you, you're going to be animating so many properties. These are artifacts. It doesn't actually need to be read. So what was I doing? So making this slower or this slower. So to change the timing, I just move the keyframe. So if we want to make it take twice as long, I just grab it and move it by 8 frames in the timeline. And now, if I animate it, it's taking twice as long. Perhaps I should show it in the context of the other animation. So it's fast. Slower. It actually, there's two things that are moving. It's the new plane, and it's the old one. So this would need to move by 8 as well. So, and these are individual objects, actually. So I would have to do that for all of them. So the best way to do is do a box select. Select them all. I have them selected. And then I can do box select in here as well. Nope. Yeah, I don't know why it's doing all these artifacts. There's something wrong with the video. And 8. And it's also terribly slow for some reason. So now I've moved all of them, so they're half the speed. So this is Dope Sheet. It's also useful because, like in here, in the curve editor, you define how the states transition. So, you know, you're changing the curve, how fast, or easing, and that kind of thing. While this is just timing when that state is happening, it's also extremely useful to copy states. So I know at certain time I want to return to that particular state. I just copy the keyframe, and I know, so for example, this icon, let's find this rhythm box. There we go. So rhythm box, I know its position here. And if I duplicate this and put it in here, it's going to be exactly there. I mean, there's other properties like scale that changed, but I know that whatever I have keyframed here, which is just location, it's going to be exactly the same as it was when I copied it. I don't know where it was, this one. So it's extremely useful. That's the Dope Sheet. How are we with time? Do you have any questions, by the way? Bastion.
Are you going to be redesigning Blender at some point for it to be usable by normal people? There's stuff everywhere, and it looks like Microsoft Office with all the options turned on.
I mean, we have people that have corner case usage of our software. It's nothing compared to massive number of long tail, like me. I'm using Blender for something that's not really meant Like Blender was not designed to do 2D animation at all. It's just no. I'm not gonna touch Blender. Well, we did actually like get involved in some cases. John was working on the XDG folder stuff for them, the icon, some of these things. Like integrating at that level, but they did have like a major redesign. One of the things that I really like, and that are completely specific to that audience, is that everything, everywhere, every key, every property is animatable. Like anywhere I am, I can just press like. Visibility, I insert a keyframe, everything is animatable anywhere. And also you can see these really cryptic properties, tooltips showing up. And that they, like, if I showed this to somebody, like it has no place there. But people will more likely be, doing very specific things, and this is even for non-hackers is useful, because like for the getting started stuff, I've written Python. It's very scary to admit that publicly, but because of these, because everything that I see in the UI, I know how to access it, and I can script it somehow, in a very dirty way. So I mean, it's just a different audience interface, and I'm not in love with many of the decisions, especially like it shows that like all the options that I've said, even I with my limited use of Blender can reliably crash it every time I do anything. So it's not the most stable piece of software, but it really does everything. Like it does everything. Okay, what was I
gonna? Yeah. Oh, so on a slightly related note, so I mean, like this tool is very much for people who do it like 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, right? So like it's very hard. So the few times I've been trying to learn Blender, right? I had a very hard time. So I was curious if you know of any other like animation tools that are good, like say I need to animate something like
every 2 weeks. There are projects like Synfig, but really I've spent time in Blender for other projects and for doing different things. So I'm just familiar with it, that's why. But there's many things like the patterns that they use that are common in other, like the dope sheet, like you can't animate without it. Every piece of software that you see has them. The graph editor also, like any piece, like Apple Motion, everything, or the Adobe After Effects, everything is using pretty much the same kind of pattern. So I would say a lot of people will be familiar with most of it. Like there's the material setup, that's kind of something that's specific to Blender, but I've just shown you how to do it, and you know it now. So it's good.
So your recommendation is to properly take time and learn it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi. I'd be really interested to know more about this is probably something I'd like to have as a conversation afterwards, probably. But I'd be really interested to know about all the specific features you love and you use the most to get your job done, and maybe even some of the features to do with authoring transitions that you wish you maybe even had that are maybe buried and hard to get to in Blender. Because I'm working on a tool actually myself called Rig, which is basically trying to achieve this kind of authoring capability for user interfaces, specifically for user interfaces and with the rendering technology. But I want this kind of visual design capability, but really I only want the bits that matter for UI
development. Well, the thing that I don't do in Blender, I mentioned it at the beginning, is interactivity. I mean, there is the game engine, but I just went for the web technology. So I use jQuery. Whenever there's interactivity involved, you want to change depending on the user input. This is not the best tool to prototype it in. I'm sure that there's going to be people that are very familiar with the game engine that will try to prove me wrong, but I just go for web for these cases. Yeah. But for just like this stuff, transitions, animation, there's very little that you need. You just need the basic transforms, so scaling, rotation, movement. One thing that is kind of clumsy to do, which I was going to demo, I don't know if it makes sense, is sort of clipping masks, or like when you want something to appear, like fade in into an area or that sort of thing, which I'm currently just doing like a mask, so like binary, so I'm doing it with Booleans, with Boolean operator. Blender has got I may have not made it clear, the interactivity means that you're not doing many destructive actions, and Blender has got this modifier stack, so you're changing things, but you're keeping the primitives, so you can always go back and change it, so the Boolean operator is also not really destroying the shapes, the mesh. It's just being dynamically applied and animated, so that's how I do in here, if you look. So this object is a cage, so everything that moves, so you have stuff, this is just movement, but everything that's outside of this cage is hidden. It's invisible because this is on these objects. So that's one of the areas that, if I wanted to do the fade that I would want to do, it would be tricky. I don't know how I would do it in a 3D view on its own. I would know how to do it in the compositor, but then it's just more work. And
I definitely figure I should sit down with you others that are also interested in using tools like this, but
he's sort of using the same technologies. If that tool was built using Clutter, it could not just be a prototyping tool, but some stuff could actually be taken.
Well, for instance, something that I'm really interested in is the idea of having the visual tool actually even directly connected to devices that you're developing your user interface for. So, for instance, developing for a phone or a tablet or so, you should actually, on the one hand, you've got the technology that's being shared between the design tool that's going to run on the phone or so, but you make changes as you're designing them on your desktop machine, and you should be able to just pick up that phone on your desk and actually check out how the animation feels and how it responds. So if we were looking at the problem specifically from the point of view of UI development, I'm sure that we could figure out a much better workflow.
So I have some other things that I could show. So, for example, I've shown the example of scroll. I probably didn't. So this is also an older project. I need to change. Well, let me just change to default, and I want to do touch. Yes, touch. So this is So this is just demoing the behavior of scrolling on touch devices. And you can see that the big object that corresponds to the page is being moved by that finger circle. And this is not animated separately because it's actually quite hard to do a similar sort of thing that gets you out of impression of animation is like when a character moves on a surface on the ground and it slides. So the ground is not actually, like the foot is not moving in correspondence to the surface. Same thing would be here. Like if I would want to change anything in terms of time, it would look bad. So this is actually using constraints. So that's another like tool that's built into Blender. So are you interested in hearing about it? Or is it just out of time? Oh, I thought I have so much time that I was gonna. All right. Well, if you're interested, then I can tell you later. So thank you.